I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And now, a swinging look at NBC's new must-see TV Wednesday.
Wednesday, you heard us say a prayer for shows that we really could care for. You gave us must-see TV. Hey, this fall, it's Swing, Claroquette, News Radio, and Men Behaving Badly. An all-new Wednesday on NBC.
Another night of must-see TV Wednesday, this fall on NBC.
So who wants to be the bird in the hand?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 42 for the week of September 15th, 2014. I am marginalized Friday night time slot David T. Cole, and I'm here with widely derided spin-off Sarah D. Bunting.
How you doing?
Remake of a foreign series Tara Ariano.
Yup.
And very special episode John Ramos.
Ooh, a refrigerator.
We didn't all die. We're back.
But we might die today because it is approximately 2,000 degrees outside.
I actually looked it up for the purposes of science. It is 98. The real feel today in Los Angeles is 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
So it's like we're living in our own bodies.
That's non-valley, right?
Like right. It's probably, that's here. Yeah. It's really not okay.
I'm wearing a scarf. Okay. Is that a bad time to bring that up?
That's great for you. So you're actually... Sarah, you probably have socks on, too.
Sarah's actually in fall TV. We're just pretending.
Yes. So welcome back to the hellscape that is Los Angeles. John Ramos!
Hey!
Who will be joining us for a discussion of the fall season that is kind of, sort of, almost kind of not really started yet. So we'll be going through our picks and unpicks. But first, some site business.
All right. Well, since John is here, we are giving him the honor of starting this off. What is going to happen is this. John has come up with a phrase that he has given to us. And at some point in this podcast, one of us is going to try to work that phrase in quite naturally into the flow of things. And whoever guesses it on the thread for this episode then tells us the next phrase for the next episode that we have to try to sneak in. So perk those ears up. Listen very closely. If you guess the phrase, you tell us the next phrase. That's it. Just a little fun little game. And John has told us, and we're going to try to do that within the next, probably, it's a big show, so probably next hour and a half or so. And that's how we play.
Alrighty. So we, for the purpose of fall 2014, we're revisiting a format that we've used before, going through the big bad list of all of the shows that are upcoming. All the new shows, that is. And each giving a pick for one that we're into, one we should be into but we're not, or maybe we have reservations, and one that no one should be into. And we will each go in a circle with each category of picks.
Oh, well, why don't you start us off, Tara?
All right. My into choice is Marry Me. Oh, yeah. Well, I should say none of us knows each other's picks yet, so there may be some duplication. My pick is Marry Me, starring Casey Wilson and Ken Marino, both great geniuses. And it's from the creator of Happy Endings, David Casp, or possibly Caspi. There's an E on the end. I don't know if it's silent, but he is also now Mr. Casey Wilson. So if this is just...
Oh, I see. I see how it works.
If this is just a third of Happy Endings, that's still pretty great. So I'm very excited to see that, even though it's on NBC.
John?
My show that I am into is The Flash.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you get your disc, by the way? Okay, oh, right, thanks.
I got the pilot for John to review.
Yeah, yes. Maybe I should have watched it before I said this.
That's not how this
never
works.
Never mind. This is all whatever. Uninformed, yeah. Mostly. Yeah, John will be covering it for us on Previously.tv this season.
It's an Arrow spinoff, which wouldn't have been a selling point for me since I watched the pilot and hated it and never watched it again. Uh-huh. But I heard from people that I trust that it actually got quite watchable and interesting.
Big following on Previously.tv
yeah,
for Arrow.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. It's also Berlanti, which, you know, is never really been bad for me, but the casting for me is like the real thing. Tom Cavanaugh is in it, who's one of my favorite TV actors. Danielle Panabaker, who I think has been pretty good. She did her best with the Justified Ava in prison storyline, which wasn't great, I know, but I liked her.
But she was good, yeah. She was good.
Like Bill Sadler is scheduled to guest star.
Love him.
He always brings that, you know, to that genre. Mm-hmm. Wentworth Miller, which, you know, admittedly is pretty terrible, but I feel like could probably do his best work in the genre for mm-hmm. some reason.
But also answers the question, what's that guy up to these days?
Yeah, so I know. Nice. Well, I want it coming out, which is what, you know, I want to support him now that he's an out gay man.
Plus, didn't he direct something too? Or write, maybe he wrote something.
Mm.
I am uninformed. I continue, John.
He wrote Prison Break, the fanfic spectacular.
But speaking of gay men, any show called The Flash that casts the actual Flash, John Wesley Shipp, is something that I have to give a try and be excited about. So that's mine.
All right. So mine is Constantine, based on the Hellblazer comics, which I started reading a little while ago. If you've been listening for a bit, you know I've, like, in the past year, started reading comics after 41 years of
Nerd. Basically not.
And this one was recommended to me, and it's pretty good, I find. I read before this one called Lucifer, which is a spinoff of Sandman, which kind of deals with a lot of the same subject matter. And I thought it was a little bit more compelling. That's not to knock Constantine. It's actually pretty interesting. It's about a guy who's a demon fighter, and he let somebody die. And now he's all bummed out, and he's all like, you know, drinky, smoky, trench coat guy. You know the type. And he's called back in action. And now he's fighting demons and blah, blah, blah. Nothing like the Keanu Reeves movie, apparently. I guess they took a lot of liberties. I mean, this is the same source material.
The movie took liberties or the...
Yes.
Or the, this is closer to the
So
source.
The casting, if you've seen the photos of the dude, he actually looks like the comic book guy, which is, you know, nice. Apparently, they've... the one character trait, he's a chain smoker in the comics, and they've thrown that out. So
lame.
But, you know, network TV. but it's pretty interesting. You know, I like... there's a lot of that going around. It's got to be better than The Strain. Kind of deals with the same sort of supernatural stuff, and it's probably going to hit your pleasure points if you're into stuff like Walking Dead, I'm going to guess. And the word is that it's not quite as like Hannibal-y in its graphicness, but it is darker.
I will say though that Hannibal is sort of more of a calling card than it I would have been. There are other years when I would have been alarmed by this show being on NBC, but now that they've actually pulled off Hannibal, I'm cautiously optimistic that they can do this well.
Yeah, me too. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Sarah? As long as it's not Constantine from American Idol.
You know, he has a decent career in musical theater now. Let's leave Constantine alone. He's got his own problems. Sarah.
Well, speaking of shows that are sort of whatever, live only in our brains, whenever someone says Arrow, I think Harrow, and I'm like, why can't that be a show?
Yeah.
Why can't Richard Harrow, I don't know, PI,
mask.
Be a
Love
thing?
Him.
I'm always wanting to put characters on shows as PIs.
Sure.
Did he die? Spoiler?
Yes.
I stopped watching.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
So now he's free to be in an alternate dimension, solving crimes.
True.
Speaking of that, the new show that I am excited about, and also it's more of a cautious optimism, but since it got whatever 13 episodes picked up, I feel like that's going to let it be whatever it's going to be artistically and not be that sort of weird new showy type of show.
Yeah.
Gotham.
Mm.
And not only because of its bunt nip stars.
There's a bunch. It's true. They really packed the rafters for Sarah this year.
It is bunt nippy, and it's also sort of angel-y, but in the good ways, I think. I haven't seen frame one of it, but I don't know. I'm excited. I'm interested to see what they do, and I'm hoping that Fox's confidence in the concept and in the season order pays off.
You should say who the bunt nip stars are too, by the way.
Oh yeah, Donald Logue, Ben McKenzie. Mm-hmm. Is there someone else that I
Michael
forgot?
Michael Vartan? Isn't he in it?
Yeah. He's in it. He's Sarah. Pretty bunt nippy. Yeah. Le bunt nip.
And of course, Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh, yeah. Who's bunt nippier than her?
So I read, I'll piggyback on this because this is my should be, but I'm not sure if I am. Only because, as Patton Oswalt says, I don't really want to see how you became the thing you became. I just want to see, you know, Batman do stuff. But I granted, it's not. It will depend on how much the show leans on the Batman side of things and how much it just wants to be its own creature, probably, for me. I read that each episode of the season has a potential Joker. Like, you're not going to know who the Joker is. In each episode, there's going to be someone who could be the Joker, and I think probably
that's cool.
Addressed. Yeah, I think that's fun. It's always fun to have a little guessing game in a show that's doing a slow burn of its character introduction.
Well, and especially when it's a story that everyone knows, you know, like
as long as it's not in the forefront, as long as it's not that Cylon, like Battlestar Galactica, you know.
Well, and think of all the Jokers that are already sort of in the collective brain, you know, you can't really step to that. So just let it be like the potential Slayers, mm-hmm. except, you know, not shitty.
Yeah.
From what I hear, the superhero shows are the only shows across any network that are tracking, well, that are not like pre in danger of cancellation.
That's what I read too, that there are like five shows that people are pre excited about. The Flash,
right.
Constantine, Gotham, How to Get Away with Murder, the new Shonda mm-hmm. Rhimes show, and Sarah's favorite, NCIS New Orleans. Not actually Sarah's favorite, although who knows?
It's Bacula.
You haven't
Speaking
watched the
Bunda.
Pilot yet. I know, it's true.
Bacula.
Shall we move into our should-bes? Mine was Gotham. Tara, what do you got?
Mine is, I should preface this by saying, I definitely will watch every episode of this, despite my early fears. And they do have episodes up on the press site, but I haven't watched them yet. But the show is Mulaney. Hear me out. I love John Mulaney. I love his stand-up.
Yeah,
I think
really
he's
good.
Super duper funny. He's unimpeachable to me. But the premise of the show is that he's a really funny comedian who goes to work for Martin Short. And based on what I've seen of Martin Short and his recent appearances on Hollywood Game Night, all of which have been, actually there may have only been one, but it was terrible enough for multiple episodes. He is such a fucking ham. I'm not confident in his ability to rein it in at all. Plus, it's a multicam show, which also is nervous making for me and that particular actor in terms of like how crazy and I hesitate to say it because maybe too soon, but also Robin Williams-y it could get.
Right.
Even the splash page with them on it is annoying on the press
Plus,
site.
Apparently the requisite thing for sitcoms this year is like the ginger bearded fat best friend. And this show's got one too. It's like, that's the thing this year. But anyway, whatever. Like I said, I'll watch every episode also, and I'm hopeful, but I'm nervous.
That show was rejected by another network before it landed.
Right. It was supposed
Fox,
to be
at
NBC and then Fox picked it up.
Yeah.
Tara, how did you live before the litmus test of Hollywood Game Night to know what to think about
John, people? That's such a great question. You know, it really is way more useful than you'd think. Because before I was like, Michael Weatherly seems like a fine sort. And then I saw him sockless and drunk on Hollywood Game Night. I'm like, fuck that guy.
Also, even if Martin Short on a game show isn't, you know, a good enough point, remember Arrested Development.
Yeah.
What a great show. Really, what a dud. Like, that's a zero in the middle of a great run of
model.
Episodes.
It's really true.
Yeah.
John.
My should be, and I'm not sure how much I should be anyway, but is From A to Z.
Oh, yeah. We watched that.
Pretty much solely. Aww. Pretty much solely because Ben Feldman, Ginsburg. My beloved Ginzo, is a...
I think it's called Just A to Z, in case people are looking it up. Because it's on Hulu if you care to watch it.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. but...
In that long pause, everything.
I stopped watching How I Met Your Mother before Kristen Milioti showed up, and everyone says she was fantastic. So
she was.
Great, you know, two good leads. But, I mean, essentially the network description makes it sound like a cross between 500 Days of Summer, which I found murderously twee, mm-hmm. and Dharma and Greg, which is best left in the 90s, I think. So that's my hesitation.
Yeah, we watched the pilot.
I would probably watch the pilot, unless you tell me not to. But.
No, I mean, it's very pilot-y, but the problem is it's so high concept.
Yeah.
Like the premise is we're tracking this couple through their entire relationship, and presumably they break up at the end of the season.
Right.
I guess they probably get back together after that. But it's just very like he's a romantic and she's very
right. That's the Darby and Greg part reversed. I thought. Yeah,
well, it's also How I Met Your Mother exactly. Like that's true, Ted and Robin.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I got so burned by How I Met Your Mother that I'm nervous about. I probably will continue to watch it for at least a little bit, but it's there are definitely causes for concern. Like that's why I'm excited about Marry Me. It's like sometimes all you need is like here's a couple and they're in a relationship. The end. Like it doesn't need to be more complicated
right.
than that.
Right.
To me. Anyway, Dave already said his. Sarah, what is yours?
Mine is How to Get Away with Murder. Ooh. I love Viola Davis. I love murder.
love getting away with stuff.
And I will watch every episode of it probably like you with yours. Mm-hmm. But the thing is like fool me twice, shame on Scandal. Like I don't think Shonda is something that I can do on a regular basis without having a meltdown. And more to the point, when you have a spouse who is absolutely like Shonda allergic, it can be really difficult. And he's like, why do they all talk the same? Why are they so annoying? Why is she always behind a lamp? And I'm like, all right, I'll take the last one first.
Yeah.
And I have no answer for the other ones. And he's right.
Yeah, it's true.
And, you know, Quinn is not going to be on the show. Mm-hmm. So that's a plus.
But there will probably be a Quinn, even if it's not her.
There's always a Quinn. I mean, on Grey's Anatomy, like everyone's the Quinn. So that was pretty easy to avoid. So I sort of like fell in the hole with Scandal, not realizing that this is what happens with Shonda. Mm-hmm. And also that there's that like, you're just about to give up and then she pulls something awesome for like three episodes in a row and you're back in thing. Mm-hmm. I think I might be too old.
Did I fugue out in front of the TV or is there a Scandal inspired clothing line now?
There is. Yeah. Sarah and I may have been Skyping about it earlier. There is. And actually to their credit, it looks pretty hot.
Nice.
Moving on.
All right, so now we're in my favorite part of it. The no one should be into this show. And Tara, what do you got?
Well, this is a bit of a cheat because it's actually already premiered, but Utopia, the worst piece of shit I've seen this year.
Confirmed.
Oh my God.
I believe that you were this unpsyched about it before it aired.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, it's an interesting idea. And I...
No, it isn't.
It's an interesting idea. The problem is the casting. Like, the premise is they've put all these people in a dome, essentially, except without a dome. But they're in this compound that's probably, like, somewhere in Calabasas. And they're, you know, they have a certain number of resources, but it's not clear, like, how long that will last. And anyway, the idea is that they're supposed to be building their ideal society, and they're supposed to be in there for a year. And then... Except after a month, a new person comes in. I don't know if that means another person cycles out. None of this is clear to me because I only watch the pilot and that's all I will watch. But the problem is the casting, because I feel like we're now at the point where it's like reality TV has gone on long enough, and I'm not going to be like a knee-jerk reality TV is bad person.
I'll do it.
Christ knows I watch enough of it. But that's now me. we're at the point where it's like the only kind of person who wants to be on a reality show is a crazy person. Like is someone who is shameless,
human
not
garbage.
Interesting to watch, human garbage, whose only purpose on a show like this is going to be to like pick fights and be a psycho.
Yeah.
And that's like 2/3 of this cast.
All racists welcome.
Yeah, and so, like, there's a fight in the beginning of the episode is they've all come in with these crates of, like, their personal items from home or whatever, but there's only a limited number that they can actually bring in. So their first, you know, effective challenge, even though there's no goal to this and no winner, is they have to figure out what they're going to fit in the number of crates that they're allowed to bring in. And, like, this ex-con guy, which, first of all, ex-con, second, won't say what he was in prison for, like, immediately starts picking a fight about not being able to bring in all his clothes. Like, and every act of the episode is some different, sorry to be a misandrist, but fucking man, like, picking a fight and being aggressive and awful and hostile. And before the first hour is even up, they've had to have a vote about this one guy because he got super drunk and sexually assaulted one of the women. And they're, like, have to sit down and decide if they're going to, like, kick him out. And that's the first hour. Like, this really tells you everything you need to know about what a bunch of shitty assholes these people are. And I feel like it's morally wrong to watch it. So that's why I'm going to say Utopia. It's my new Doomsday Preppers.
That's a good pick.
Wow.
End of rant.
Although you do wonder, like, now I have this thing watching reality shows when people sort of like start freaking out kind of like on week two or episode two, that it's like, spot the person who should have quit smoking 4 weeks before they went in the house and not the day they got
there. Or spot the actor, I mean, which is also very possible. Like, it's possible these people are cast with a brief, but anyway. I won't get into a whole conspiracy theory about Utopia because it is not worth it. John.
Mine is Stalker.
Oh, God. Another great pick.
Because not only, I mean, speaking of like borderline morally wrong, let's just say the premise is icky and objectionable.
It was the undarling of press tour this year. It was the one that had the most angry panel at the TCA.
I mean,
press
look,
tour.
It's been all over the press, so I don't need to. We already have an SVU. It's not to, you know, sully SVU's name by putting it in the same category, but it's Kevin Williamson. Enough said.
Yeah.
And as much as I could look at him all day and think he works well in certain roles, I think this is going to be less American Horror Story Dylan McDermott and more Hostages Dylan McDermott, which, you know.
There's kind of only the one.
Well, but jerking off on the
sometimes
camera is fine. In front of the camera is fine.
Yeah.
Trying to nail the finer emotions is nope. So sorry, Dylan.
Yeah, no. Yeah. He tries very hard.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Okay, mine. Let me just read you the synopsis. Even the first sentence, you'll hate it. Based on the experience of real world genius Walter O'Brien. Scorpion.
Oh yeah.
Is about a bunch of nerds who form a team to solve some of the world's most complex problems. Brackets. It's like if the Justice League of America traded their superpowers for super smarts, computer wizardry, and hacking skills. It's elite. No, that was
hacking isn't this skills, like Lisa, when Lisa joins Mensa? Like,
more like a fruitopia.
And to give the show a Big Bang Theory-esque twist, Catherine McPhee plays the diner waitress who glues them all together.
Amid servings of huevos rancheros, she's helping all the nerds be buddies.
Yeah, this sounds just absolutely like terrible. It sounds like somebody's half-baked spec after they watched Sneakers and like, you know, whatever it was, 1992 or something like that.
All you people who didn't watch Smash, this is what happens.
Yeah.
Oh God.
I believe it is CBS. So add CBS-ness to this, where you know all the computer stuff's going to be. They're all going to be hacking on their 3D virtual world versions of what should be just a plain, you know, Nick script, style stuff. So yeah, not thinking this is going to hit everybody's sweet spot. Certainly not mine. Sarah.
On top of the sins that you just mentioned, I keep confusing it with Aquarius.
Oh, yeah.
Which is coming out early next year and is going to be the Duchovny hunts down the Manson family one, which I'm actually psyched about. It could be horrible, but I'm psyched about it. And I keep being like, oh, yeah, they moved that up. Oh, shit, that old thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, mine is Manhattan Love Story. First of all, it's one of like, you know, shows always cluster this way. This is one of the high concept romance cluster fuckers. And this is from the press site. One of the sentences from the description. What you'll learn early on from the voices in their heads is that guys like sex and women like purses.
What? That's not real.
I mean, I think the concept is that you hear their thoughts.
Right.
So it's like Earshot meets How I Met Your Mother, but without all the satisfying.
Isn't that a Mel Gibson movie?
Those are like secrets. I mean, even by the clicheometer, that would be your outward voice, not your inward voice, right?
Yeah. Ooh.
Well, and if they're joking, like it's possible that they're trying to be satirical in this description, but actually, it's not possible. I don't even remember who's in it. I just saw that log line and was like, hell to the no.
Evan from Greek is in it. I forget who the girl is. Oh, no, I don't. It's Anna Lee Tipton from America's Next Top Model. Anna Lee from, she was also in Crazy Stupid Love. That girl.
Well, that sounds
crickets.
Terrible.
Dave, wow. I can't believe that your top pick was not Forever.
Forever? Well, let me tell you this. The pilot of Forever, which is basically New Amsterdam, was
shit-tastic. It's also on Hulu if you want to watch it.
It was a pretty good, terrible pilot. I doubt it the newness of it, like, you know, discovering all the shitty things about this show is probably only going to last one episode, you know? Like, I don't think it's going to go the distance as far as a fun crap show can. If you haven't watched it, you definitely do have to seek out the pilot. It's pretty dumb.
It's easy to seek out. Like I said, it's on Hulu. They put it up early. But yeah, only once in a blue moon does an almost human come along. And thread the needle of terribleness. Sorry,
Dave. I managed to forget about Almost Human.
Aww.
All right, let's hand it over to our 6-year-old Canadian correspondent. Here's Liv's face-off report.
Hi, Libby.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching episode 8 of Face Off.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about the episode? How did it start?
There was a foundation challenge, and they were making Bloody Mary.
So each contestant had to make their version of Bloody Mary?
Yeah.
And who won this foundation challenge?
It was Rachel.
And what was her? What did her Bloody Mary look like?
It was face stitches.
Mm-hmm. Because she was a face stealer.
So what's that mean? She took someone else's face and then stitched it on her head?
Right. That was Rachel's interpretation of Bloody Mary.
What's interpretation mean?
Her idea of what it would be.
Okay.
And can you tell me, can you describe what the spotlight challenge was this time?
They had to make villains based on posters.
Right, pretend movie posters.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the movies that you've seen, Liv, who is the biggest villain in the movies that you've seen?
Can I just tell you a couple of movies and then their villains?
Sure.
So, in Beauty and the Beast, the biggest villain is Gaston.
Mm-hmm.
And in Frozen, the biggest villain is Hans. When they sang Love Snow Bindor, they were just pretending to love each other.
Oh, that's not nice.
You have to love who you love so you know that it's real.
Okay. That's very insightful, honey. Can you tell me, in the Spotlight Challenge, who was the winner?
It was George.
What was his movie poster?
The ex-girlfriend.
Do you remember what that makeup looked like?
I forgot what his creature looked like already.
Yeah, because it wasn't your favorite?
No.
Which one was your favorite?
It was Kaylin. And she had the homecoming screen. Actually, I think my favorite was Rachel's.
Yeah? Rachel's was the one that kind of looked like a queen with a mouth in the belly.
Yeah.
Was that one your favorite?
Yeah.
Why?
Because the cool thing about it looks friendly and it looks like a beautiful queen, but when you come to greet the queen, it's like, she opens her stomach and she's like, nom, 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 you're gone.
That's silly. And who was the loser this week?
It was Sasha.
And what did, she did Bonnie and Cyanide. And do you remember what her, that was her movie poster, do you remember what her makeup looked like?
Sort of.
With all the colorful veins?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was why they didn't like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they saved her from elimination.
Oh, was that exciting for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you didn't think that was coming.
Mm-mm.
So are you happy that she got to stay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because in the animal creature one, where I wanted Stella to be eliminated, because she said 2 curse language words, she made a beautiful owl, but the only thing that she didn't like was the leggings.
Mm-hmm. So you're happy that Sasha gets another chance?
Mm-hmm.
Super. That's great. Thank you so much for talking to me this week, Liv.
You're welcome.
Talk to you next time.
See you next time.
Aww.
right, that means it's time to go around the dial. And Tara, what do you have for us?
Couples therapy. Couples therapy is back for its fifth season. And some of the celebrities, as usual, are very marginal. But
wait. Really? Fifth. Five seasons?
This is season five. Yep.
That's information I wish I didn't have.
There are a lot of D-list celebrities who have relationship problems, Sarah, so maybe you shouldn't hate because you did watch all of Marriage Boot Camp. No, you should. Much like Marriage Boot Camp, this features both a couple from Jersey Shore, Dina and her boyfriend Chris, and also from The Bachelor franchise, it's Juan Pablo and his girlfriend Nikki.
Ugh.
And so far, they are the reason to watch because he is such a sociopath. He is such a creep. And so apparently, they're still pretending that they're a couple, or she's still putting up with his bullshit after all this time. And their big issue is he still has not told her that he loves her. And they still don't live in the same city. And so they get the first, like, two-on-one session with Dr. Jen, where Nikki is like, I basically have given up expecting that he's going to say he loves me, but every day I'm like, maybe today's the day. And Juan Pablo looks at her with this look of like complete delight, like she's a puppy that just rolled over. It's like, oh, I didn't know you felt that way. Like, yeah, you're emotionally abusing this girl, you fucking psycho. Anyway, yet to come are Jenna Jameson and her boyfriend, who I think is an MMA guy.
Of course he is.
And then there's also Dick from Big Brother.
Dick!
That guy. Nice one, Dave, since you did not know I was going to say that.
Quick on the draw after a month off.
Yes.
That's what she said.
Oh, and then there's a rapper from Naughty by Nature, I think, Tretch, and his girlfriend. And playing into all the stereotypes of every single season of Couples Therapy, the rapper cheats on his girlfriend all the time. Every single season, that's the case.
And
anyway.
Isn't that the group that did OPP?
Yes.
So he should be respectful of other people's property.
You would think. Yeah, okay. That's not what the second P stands for, Dave. Anyway, Couples Therapy is my new garbage show jam. So now that Married at First Sight is over, although the reunion is tomorrow, I'm very excited.
What does the second P stand for?
Do you seriously not
know?
No,
I don't.
It stands for pussy, Dave.
Oh, no.
Now Liv can't listen to this segment. Are you happy?
Forgiveness, please.
Couples Therapy on VH1.
I think I only listened to the CBC version,
the cleaned up version.
Yeah, video hits version of OPP.
That, except the Canadian version is about the Ontario
provincial police.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, what's your pick?
Do I not get the interstitial
music? Yeah, Dave, come on.
And now it's time to go to Sarah. Sarah, Dave, around the dial.
Dave is too busy laughing at himself for being a naive child.
Okay. I feel so dumb.
Well, you're not smart. Sarah, what is your pick
I'm
for around the dial?
That's not week? That's not a smart, dumb thing. That's just being misinformed.
No, it's being a naive child, like I said. Sarah!
Mennonite. Yes. So there's this channel called Stars, the Z. Mm-hmm. You may not know that, but it's a real channel. And they have the show called The Chair, which is not about people going to the chair. And I don't know who approved this nickname or this show name because it's not good. But basically, it's the Project Greenlight substitute that we were all going to make do with until actual Project Greenlight like rebooted itself. Yep. But it does have Chris Moore, who is the like yelly, toothy producer who was basically the best part of the original Project Greenlight. Yep. And it's actually pretty good because their premise this time is that they already wrote the script and picked the directors, and it was like a total nepotism thing, which they're pretty upfront about. I think they picked the people for maximum drama. They give the script each to the directors. They're allowed to do rewrites if they want, and then they both have to shoot it and the audience votes on it. But on the way there, you have all the like directory actory things that are happening on an indie film, and then Chris Moore curses a lot and tells people they're idiots, and Zachary Quinto doesn't exactly tell people they're idiots, but he makes eyebrows that make it clear that he thinks they're idiots. And the one director, Anna Martimucci, is she's so annoying. she's like that perfect annoying for watching a reality show. She's like not so annoying that you're like, I can't with this anymore. Mm-hmm. But she's just a little bit annoying in that way that you can feel superior to it, but not want to flick your own eyeball. if you can find Stars somehow, I recommend it. And actually, if you have it like via your cable system, they have the first 5 episodes up on Stars Play, which is the HBO Go of Stars.
They've only aired 2 so far, correct?
They have aired 2. It airs, and this is how much they believe in the show. They air it Saturdays at 11
Yeah, after a replay of like 2 Outlanders back to back, like the same episode twice, and then the chair.
Of what?
Outlander.
Outlander!
That's how you have to say it.
11 a.m. or p.m.? I don't know which is worse.
P.m.
Well,
I mean,
at 11 a.m., you could
still
compete with like Transformers or whatever.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I wish they hadn't, you know, sent it off to die with this time slot. I mean, I guess it's Stars and they're like, it doesn't matter what time we air it because no one actually gets this channel. But if you were thinking about getting that channel because of Outlander.
Thank you.
Way to be a good sport.
Recommend.
What, it's also weird that they named it The Chair after there's already been a reality show called The Chair.
That's what I was wondering. That's
it's like
I thought.
The director's chair would have been a better name because I presume that's the chair that they're referring to.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It just makes... although maybe there's a twist at the end. Ooh. Like, it's not really getting any
what
press.
What was the name
so maybe
of...
the one who loses.
Right. What was the name of John McEnroe's fake reality show on 30 Rock?
Oh, shit. What was it?
Was it The Chair?
No, it was...
I think it was.
No, it was... He was the host of Gold Case.
No, but he had something else. Didn't he have a couple?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
I don't know.
All right.
Wasn't homonym. That's all I know.
All right.
Well, P.S. If you got burned by On the Lot, this is way better.
Burned by On the Lot, this is better?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That wouldn't be tough.
Let's talk about The Blacklist and these ads that are all over at least Los Angeles where The Blacklist is portrayed as covers of like 5 or 6 magazines. What the fuck? I don't understand this campaign at all. It's really pissing me off,
Dave
too.
Dave is so mad at these ads.
So mad.
Every time we pass one, he's mad all over again. And there's one at the corner of our street that has like 5 different magazine covers.
All right. So if you don't know, The Blacklist is the one with James Spader and he's like this mysterious...
And his hat.
And his hat. And he's this guy who's trying to get revenge on people or something, blah, blah, FBI. Doesn't really matter. It has nothing to do with fucking magazines or the publishing industry. And there's like The Blacklist and there's like a Playboy one. It's like The Blacklist dude is showing us his latest moves or something. There's like a Wired one where it's like The Blacklist guy, how does he do it? And then there's a People one and an Us Weekly one and a New Yorker
Cooking
one.
Mm-hmm.
And it just has nothing...
Reds, Huevos, Rancheros.
And it has nothing to do with the... show. It is, and I don't understand who, like, did they decide that the best market for Blacklist was low-level graphic designers? it's driving me nuts. I'm not a crackpot, but this is one of the worst marketing campaigns I've seen for a television show in quite a while. It's driving me nuts.
It's true.
Dave, just wait till it's Emmy season next year and they roll out the concept again with For Your Consideration at the top of each magazine.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah, Dave was mad at the Mad Men ones, too. The ones that were all linked.
Yeah,
like
I wasn't
ads
a huge
for different
fan
projects.
Either. Yeah.
Because it was very impenetrable.
Yeah.
Like, it was hard to tell even what they were supposed to be.
And then they were folding in clothing line ads.
Well, that's what they looked like, yeah, but they weren't. Yeah. It was just like, well, okay, there's John Slattery in an ad for suits. Like, it's not like the suits that he wears as Roger look that different than what he would wear. Like,
but didn't some
event.
Of them actually say, like, the Roger Sterling collection or something like that?
Yeah, but they weren't real ads.
Okay,
that wasn't a real
product.
That wasn't a real product. Anyway.
Yeah. Grr.
Yeah, good luck following that craziness. Oh, wait, I forgot what you're talking about.
I love Dave's
craziness.
I love Dave's righteous anger. It doesn't come out that often. that's what she said. So a few months ago, I became aware of a series of tweets between Joe Reed, a famous original EHG person, and a friend of the show, Dave Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of evangelically praising the virtues of an Ianla. And I wondered, what's an Ianla? Well, as myself of 4 months ago learned, Ianla Van Zandt is many things. A minister, lawyer, former welfare mother. Probably most importantly, a woman who was cast out of the world of Oprah and lived to tell about it and successfully returned. And now she has a show called Ianla Fix My Life, in which she her hat is life coach. She, I wouldn't say this kind of show is normally in my wheelhouse, but Ianla is someone with a strong personality and rich history who you could enjoy on, well, poor history sometimes,
she is.
Yeah. That you can enjoy on levels both straight and ironic, at least I can. On the one hand, she combines, I would say, genuine empathy for her subjects with, like, no bullshit attitude. But she, as I wrote in a post for Previously TV, she has an over-reliance on props.
Yeah.
And I won't go into the whole thing with the doll since, you know, I wrote about it already, but...
We'll link it in the show notes.
She brings, you know, she brings out cowbells. She uses herself as props, as a prop. Like, when she tells someone that she has their back, she literally will stand or sit behind them and have their back. And it's, again, kind of touching that she would do that, but also deeply hilarious, even in, like, you know, mm-hmm. moments that are meant to be touching. So, PTV contributor Mark Blankenship pre-fell in love with the show once I, from my post, and I'm looking forward to hearing his thoughts. But they're in the middle of a three-part episode, which I've shown two of, about a man who fathered how many children? 34.
Oh! Just 34?
Just 34, but he's also, like, kind of informally adopted 9 more. Oh, so,
well, okay.
It's actually 43. Okay. So check it out. Okay. They'll show all three episodes this Saturday, and I think Tara will back me up when I say that you should watch it.
Yeah, it's nuts. Ianla is fascinating. You have to seek out, if you haven't seen them, the episodes of Oprah, because it was in, like, Oprah's final season of her syndicated show,
yeah.
where she readmitted Ianla, like, into the fold, and they had it out, and it's, I mean, it's just, I can't possibly describe it in a way that would do it justice, but...
No, I've been
the bullshit
meaning to go
on
back
both
and watch
sides
that.
Is
yeah.
incredible.
Yeah, yeah. It's meta. I mean, there are real things that, like, her daughter died of cancer, you know, mm-hmm. so she's been through some shit, but
yeah.
there is, as you say, like, I mean, anyone who could get into it with Oprah like that, you know, on
right.
that level has to be worth watching for, again, like,
right.
level
but that's the thing, she
ironic.
Had to come
yeah.
back, like, as a supplicant and be like, I'm so
right.
sorry and whatever.
Right.
Fucking
yeah.
Oprah.
Today's Tiny Triumph begins with David Hasselhoff, as so many of them do. Several weeks ago, I wrote up his special on Nat Geo, Hasselhoff versus the Berlin Wall, in which I said that he was part of a trend of, like, recycling 80s and 90s stars to sort of front or be the spoonful of sugar in, like, educational or true crime programming that people might not normally watch if it weren't for The Hoff or Judd Nelson on that true crime show. So I wrote that up, and then I suggested, among other hosts of other shows, Christine Moose McGlade of You Can't Do That on Television, and then she was like a seminal figure of my childhood. Seminal, that's what she said. And she tweeted about my Hoff piece,
oh, no.
and as I said on Facebook that day, probably NBD to most of y'all, but an all-time top 10 day at work for this guy to have Moose tweeting my piece, and that it was a Hoff piece made it all the sweeter.
Nice.
That is my tiny triumph.
Oh. And another thing about The Blacklist, which I forgot to mention earlier, which is, was that whole campaign really a campaign for Just Shoot Me that was, like, sitting in somebody's drawer for 7 years? Because that's the show that would have been for, not The Blacklist, Just Shoot Me, which is actually about magazine publishing. Anyways, on with the show. I also have a tiny triumph. A friend of the show, former recapper Stephen Falk, a.k.a. Stee, has a show on FX?
Yes. No,
just one X.
One X.
Right.
FX.
Called You're the Worst. And this week, an old Glarkware shirt had a little plot point on the show. The old America is Scary shirt.
A classic.
Yeah, a classic.
Aww.
And
as I always kind of wondered with this shirt, if given the right circumstances and the right crowd, would this shirt cause somebody bodily harm? And, well, let's just say you should watch You're the Worst for the answer to that one.
Everyone in this room is now
Domer.
For having listened to it.
Okay, here's the latest for Under the Dome. I'll skip over the two episodes that aired while I was on vacation. So in the latest one, the dome is rotating. In case you are not aware, because you don't watch the show.
Which, like a microwave?
You are smart.
the dome is a microwave.
The dome is not actually a dome. It's a sphere. Oh. And half of it is underground. But in this episode, the dome starts rotating, so the coldest air somehow comes up from under the ground and causes a cold snap in the dome. So people have to, even though it's, I believe it's supposed, they film it in like North Carolina or something, but I think it's supposed to be set in New England. So all these people are acting like it never gets cold in New England. Like all these people are going to die.
In a Stephen King story.
Yeah, exactly.
Never
anyway.
Set in Maine.
Ugh,
Nats,
any...
they're all set in Maine.
Right. So.
But wait, how cold do they think the ground under the town would be that it would actually create a cold snap rather than just be, you know, 5 degrees cooler or whatever?
What's the how does air come up through the ground in this scenario? That it's like none of it makes sense.
Through domely
means.
Why
are you trying to bring science into this?
Is the part of the dome that was underground dirty when it rotates up?
Or? No, it's not.
Bullshit.
So, yeah.
And then there's that Sultan of Brunei, like, cleaning thing.
Right. Or maybe it's just like.
Inside the dome.
Maybe it just gets scraped off, like, when you, like, lower, you know, your car windows and then put them back up to get the fog off, you know? Anyway, gets very, very cold. It's like below zero Fahrenheit. And
what?
They have to set up.
Oh, Fahrenheit?
Yeah.
Below zero Fahrenheit?
Yes.
Not...
Or they say it's like 2 degrees or something. It's super duper cold.
Wow. All right.
So they and then they're like, and now the clinic is here in the school because we can't afford the clinic set anymore. Plus, there's no doctor, so what the hell difference does it make? And the science teacher somehow now knows like basic EMT techniques, and the actual EMT is doing fuck all. Anyway, Julia and Barbie, two of the more annoying characters on the show, drive to the diner where all of the mysterious food supplies that I talked about in a previous We Are All Domer segment, the food hoarder. They take an ambulance because it's got the most capacity in the diner to try and bring food back to the thing. They hit a patch of black ice because it's super duper cold. Don't know if I mentioned that. And they spin out and end up on their side. And then she gets a rod of some kind jammed in her leg so he can't move her. And then the window above them cracks. All the glass falls in on themselves and they're lying in this gurney. She's already told him like 5 times, just go and get help for yourself. And he's like, no, I'm not leaving you here. So then they're both going to die in this ambulance. And she decides that this moment when he's just fashioned a candle out of a fucking jar of petroleum jelly.
Ew.
Hey, what's up with you? Like, what? You're what? He's already been out of the dome and come back. So first of all, that's his own stupid mistake. But the fact that she's going to use this up, it's like, hey, how come you're in such a bad mood all the time? I don't know. Maybe because we're all trapped in this dome and we're fucking going to die. In fact, the two of us may die any second now. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you, Julia? You edit that out. Don't let me say that on the podcast. And so, yeah, it's not a great show. And now, apparently, at the end of it, the dome starts contracting. So maybe it's all going to be reduced to a singularity. And they'll all squish out into oblivion. And I will be happy. And there'll be no more Under the Dome for a third season, which would be cosmic justice.
The coarse words alert.
Liv is not allowed to listen to most of this podcast. She listens to her part. That's it.
Definitely Under the Dome is NC-17. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. That means it's time for the canon. John Ramos is bringing us an episode of a show for consideration into the canon. John, take it away.
Okay, so what I have for you, it will probably be no surprise considering how much I wrote about it and tweeted about it and just made people very annoyed about it. Enlisted, season 1, episode 13, Alive Day. If you follow my stuff on PTV, you might know that I covered the last few episodes as kind of a farewell to the show. Then the show kind of was in limbo for a bit because there were talks with Yahoo about possibly reviving it community style, but that did not happen. So now, as a final farewell, I'm putting a button on it by submitting it to the canon. So I would explain the initial premise, but the show will do it for me, so we can start with the first clip.
It's that time of year again. This weekend is the annual regimental ball.
Splendor has returned to Fort McGee.
Dress blues, big speeches. Pete, it's a refined atmosphere that's sick as hell.
All in the grand ballroom at the Secord Motor Lodge off Route 301.
They have a machine that just gives you ice.
This year, we're honoring a very special guest.
I wonder who it is.
It's Burt Reynolds.
He's put in 30 years of service.
Wow.
A great soldier, legendary leader, beloved by his troops. He lost his own foot in combat.
Yes, it's just gotta be Burt Reynolds.
It's me, damn it.
You don't get to see the excellent facial expression of Keith David.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. That is lacking in an audio podcast. But anyway, with the A-plot established, Randy wants to celebrate Pete's alive day, the one-year anniversary of him narrowly surviving an RPG attack, complete with a prop that I love, the Hill Are Alive t-shirt with Pete's face on it. He's happy that Pete, who, when he came back, was very closed about talking about his PTSD, has opened up about almost dying, and Pete admits that therapy is good for him. Then Derek, irritably, his default setting, it should be admitted, tells his brothers that he and Aaron, his girlfriend, broke up. Why?
I knew she was moving away, but I thought you were going to have your big goodbye at the ball.
Yeah, but then I started thinking.
Uh-oh.
I don't think we should go to the ball.
What?
What? I was trying to save us both heartache. You know, I knew if we went to the ball, we'd have a really romantic time, and then I'd fall more in love with her, and I don't want that.
You didn't say that.
You did say that. It made sense in my head, but then it came out all wrong, and then she was making a big deal out of it, so I said, if it's such a big deal to you, then fine, let's go. And I tried to save it with the rewind bit. Hi.
That is your worst bit.
Why didn't you just do a Mr. T impression?
A Peter fool.
No. I know. I blew it. And now she's leaving, so it's the last time I'm ever going to see her. So I want to be miserable by myself.
There's an easy way to fix this. Two officer and a gentleman.
What does that even mean, Randy?
You show up in uniform, sweep her off her feet, and carry her away.
Where am I carrying her to?
I don't know. The movie kind of ends.
So we've got depressed Derek, but there are many more important things going on. Pete worries about how they're going to honor Cody since Jill has gone to a lot of trouble to be his number one apple polisher, as usual. But it's all irrelevant when Cody shows up to tell them that the ball has been canceled due to budget cuts. Soon, Cody is reading a moving speech over the PA about he's come around on Rear D and how it's changed him, a journey that Pete has mirrored, so he dramatically tells his platoon that they're going to put the ball together themselves. He meets out tasks, the most important of which, keeping Cody busy, goes to Randy. Needing all hands on deck, Pete also decides he's had enough and drags Derek out of his cocoon of sadness, which is literally him wrapped up in a sleeping bag listening to, well... I'll let Pete tell it.
Frank McCourt reads Angela's Ashes.
The part where he gives the raisin to the boy with no shoes. Go away.
We're throwing a ball and I need you. Plus, I can tell you from experience, isolating yourself is the wrong move.
I really don't need Pete the therapist right now.
Well, how about Pete the sergeant? Because I am ordering you to do this.
What?
Keeping busy is what's best for you. I need you to take pictures of everybody's amazing night. Maybe you'll have an amazing night yourself. But right now... This guy wants a date with Lori Loughlin.
Got the steak. Now bring me the sizzling.
Are we still in the army?
That's the best line of the episode.
I know. God. So that last bit had to do with Chbosky making a soldier requesting a date video for Full House's Lori Loughlin. And when Chbosky tells him why he's putting himself out there, Derek realizes his old tendency to run away rather than risk getting hurt is rearing, sorry, its ugly head again. Meanwhile, Randy returns, and after having given Cody a really excellent massage, he comes back from running Cody errands, only to report that he accidentally lost Cody's fake foot. After he avoids making eye contact, a character trait established in an earlier episode, he explains what happened.
I am so
sorry I lost your fake foot.
Why did you take it in the first place?
I was gonna buy you some dress socks and I wanted to get the size right.
So you left it at the store?
I wish! I got worried I'd leave my coffee on the roof of my car, so to avoid that, I put your foot up there. But you know when you get in a car, you never think, wait, did I put my boss's fake foot on the roof? But that will be my first thought from now on.
Why were you buying me dress socks?
Because you have a meeting with General Murray in the motor pool now and they said not to eat first.
What?
It's insane! If it weren't the truth, you'd think it was a lie.
I can't meet the man with no foot!
Well. A mannequin foot?
Sergeant Major Cody, I told you I was going to attend your every need. And right now, what you need is a foot.
So speaking of Keith David's facial expressions, I am convinced that he came very close to breaking on that last bit and they just kept it in. But moving on, Randy gets him to the ball. Cody is pleasantly stunned. And Pete tells him without him, he'd be, as he puts it, alone on a beach somewhere in a bad headspace. So the ball starts. Aaron turns up. Jill gives a much improved toast. A dance-off mentioned early in the episode between Gumball and Tanisha happens, and it is hilariously disastrous down to the make-out wrestle at the end. In one bit of trivia at the ball, the bad boy that Park Max on is actually show creator Kevin Beagle's brother Ryan, who has popped up, I think, once or twice on the show. Then there is this amazing set piece as Up Where We Belong plays, which you'll remember is from Officer and a Gentleman. Randy and Pete are once again urging Derek to Officer and a Gentleman Aaron when Cody's mannequin foot breaks and he falls toward the ground in slow motion.
While dancing with his daughter.
Who is unable to hold him up. However, Randy catches him and holds him like he's the Richard Gere and Cody is the Deborah Winger. And it ends with Randy supporting Cody so he can finish the dance with his daughter.
So sweet.
In an example of how well this show turns on an emotional dime, it goes from hilarious to incredibly touching in about 2 seconds flat. And speaking of emotions, later Pete is sitting down pretty good, feeling pretty good about what he's wrought when Jill announces a special surprise, a live link with the Fort McGee soldiers who are serving in Kabul. When Pete sees them, something in him breaks. You can see
something in me broke too, by the way.
Yeah, something in everyone breaks, I think.
It was called sobbing.
Yeah, but it's partially because the work Jeff Stoltz did, I think, in that moment. When Jill tries to turn everyone's attention to him, he's gone. Cut to the morning where Pete is on that sad beach he talked about when Cody finds him along with Derek and Randy. And the last clip is the most explicit point at which Cody has shown that he's their surrogate father.
Well, I didn't end up here on my alive day. Still ended up here. So much for therapy, huh? It's just seeing those soldiers up on that screen made me think about all the guys that didn't make it that day. Now, why should I get to celebrate anyway?
Because you lived, Pete.
Yeah, I gotta tell you. Sometimes that is really hard to accept.
You know, I have an alive day, too. You can't get through one without feeling regret. But now, I can talk about it while getting a massage.
I just feel so guilty.
It's okay to feel guilt, son. It's okay to feel joy, too.
I'm so glad you're here, Pete. All your brothers are.
That was the best night of my life, Sergeant Hill.
Yeah, it was.
You gave me hope.
You made me shine.
Made me a king.
You made me happy.
You got me totally wasted. Like, seriously, Thunder Smash.
You're supposed to be here, son.
Sorry for making everyone cry. The rest isn't super audio friendly, but you could hear the beginning strains of M83's outro, which admittedly has been used a lot in pop culture, but still plays perfectly here. And Randy leads the platoon, shirtless as usual, into the water for the end. Which has happened on the end of show's first seasons quite a bit, but I would submit is more in the Brothers and Sisters season 1 finale mode than the Melrose Place season 1 finale mode. It features one last look between Cody and Pete, one of shared sadness, knowledge, and experience, and we're out. In conclusion, I would say that the show took characters and a family dynamic that felt completely lived in from the start and still managed to give them each a meaningful and touching emotional journey in a comedic context, which I think is a really impressive achievement. Much like my beloved Doom Terriers, the show has gone before its time, but I can at least say that, again like Terriers, Enlisted's finale was so emotionally satisfying that if you told me it was only ever planned to be one season, if I didn't know better, I would believe you. There are many little touches of continuity and humor I didn't even touch on. If you're interested, you can see some of them at the in the coverage that I wrote, but with that, I submit it to the group.
Yeah, this is perfect. It's so hard to calibrate, like you said, how it turns on a dime, that it, the funny like goes into the emotional stuff so deftly that you realize when you watch a show like this how bad most other sitcoms are at doing it and how it never feels earned. And this show took on a very tough, potentially tough subject with, you know, the military, especially at this point in history, and took it very seriously, I think, trying to portray that experience in a way that would honor people that actually serve, but would also, like, entertain them too, and entertain people that, you know, never did serve and don't know anyone who's currently in the military or whatever, which is me. But this is, I think, like, the best example of that mission. No pun intended. Like, I think that moment where we see the soldiers at Fort McGee, who I assume are or the soldiers in Kabul that I assume was a real platoon, like, that's where you really see, oh, like, someone in the military watched the show and grokked what they were doing. And I know when it was at risk of being canceled, there were a lot of stories in, like, Foreign Policy Review and stuff that were praising it for its portrayal of PTSD in the military and stuff. And so this makes it sound a lot heavier than it is. Ultimately, it's a really funny, smart show, but it also, like, it just gets you. And this one more so than others. This wasn't the only one that made me cry, but it's probably the one that made me cry the most. And it's an excellent choice.
Yeah, the Vets one gets me too.
The Vets one is great.
With Stacey Keach, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and the one with Pete's trailer too. Like, there's a lot of great moments in the series, and I encourage everybody who can to watch it on Hulu because it's all still there.
Yeah, speaking to your point about how much they cared about the military, I know there were many errors in the pilot that Kevin Beagle, like, you know, they hired a military consultant after that and really attempted to
make it, I think you talked about that in your interview with him too. Yeah,
make it completely
believable. So, this is an excellent choice as an example of the show, I think, to give an idea of both of the things that it does really beautifully well. You didn't touch on this in your case either, but the scene with where Pete is sort of giving Jill a workshop on her speech, and he, like, just off the top of his head totally improves it because hers is so stiff and weird and awkward. And then at the end she reads it and he just sort of stares at it and she's like, too jokey, which there's not a joke in it. And then he's, you know, it just reminds you, like, he's the guy who did go to a whole bunch of football banquets. And it just, all three of the brothers in this episode, it's a good, like, final moment with each of them, and, like, what they're like and what makes them great characters and so much fun and involving to watch.
The guy, the creator, he worked on Scrubs, right?
I think
he was a writer.
He co-created Cougar Town. That's his other.
Yeah, it really shows. It kind of this episode kind of reminds me. It's not quite as heavy, but it kind of reminded me a bit of the Brendan Fraser
episode
of Scrubs. Mm-hmm. I won't say any more about that, but you know, in that it can be funny and touching at the same time and kind of switch gears but not give you whiplash.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, as you said, a really tricky thing to do, and most shows can't do it. I do wish this show got another season, because I kind of felt like the only thing that I felt this show didn't quite get on its first run or first season was the brothers gelled really well and Keith David's character was great, but the sort of band of misfits were very much sort of siloed caricatures. Mm. And I think if they had a chance to go into season 2 and 3, then I think they could have concentrated on, you know, having that gel a bit better. And I felt like some of the storylines they do just kind of felt like they're off to the side, because I didn't really feel like that group of people were really interacting in sort of a meaningful, real way, especially when compared to the brothers. But that said, this episode is very much about Keith David and the brothers and their sort of true army experiences and what it means to be in the army and, you know, the whole band of brothers sort of thing, whether you're in active combat or you're stateside. And it works really well. It's both funny and touching. The beach scene at the end is kind of cliched, but it still works.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't capital I trying to be capital I important. It's just trying to be real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a Florida base, and I can believe it. That's what they're going to do. And you want to tackle your brother in the beach in full, you know, full gear, full dress gear, then you go ahead and do that, and I'll let you do that.
Some people were offended that they put those uniforms in the water.
Like, yeah, I was wondering about that, if you could clean those. Because those, I mean, are the dress stuff, are they wool? I mean, I don't know.
Probably.
No.
Or something.
Polyester. Polyester. Usually, especially the pants. All right. Yeah.
There you go.
So it's going to be all waterloggy. as I tweeted while I was watching it, there's all the dust in my office. Why isn't this uncancelled yet? God damn you, John. So, yeah, that's pretty much how I felt. My mother is an army brat, and she and my uncle sometimes joke about something my grandfather used to say about the army, which is that you have, like, it's a deadly serious job. It's like A plus on deadly serious and C minus on competence and logic a lot of the time. Like, I take Dave's point about the band of misfits, but, like, you just kind of wouldn't believe who they'll let in the army sometimes. And that sort of coexistence of, like, you know, it's an army, but then there's just people flailing around and being human beings. And also the, like, the sort of touching bits along with the hilarious bits, that's what life is like, that these things coexist together. And I have to say, turn it around of the decade for Jeff Stultz.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Him and Piz, but I mean, that was never Piz's fault. That was, like, the writing of that character. He was kind of a Mario Sue, I guess, just, like, not interesting on Veronica Mars. But Jeff Stultz, it was like, he's like an Easter Island statue with hair on it. Like, mm-hmm. That. And then he's just wonderful in this episode. Just really, yeah. Like, and, you know, the writing, of course, is, you know, it doesn't let him get too heavy. It never feels like something that character in that situation wouldn't say.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand why it's not uncancelled yet. Like, I just don't get it. And, like, the Goldbergs is still on? Is that on?
Yeah.
That's because the 80s are red.
Yeah, I guess so.
You forgot to mention at the end that...
And then Lori Loughlin shows up.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I was like,
right.
I don't know which I want more, like, for her not to show up and him to still be content,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or for her to show up so that I will be content. And then when she showed up, I started crying again. I was like, oh.
all his dreams came true. I totally agree with you about Jeff Stultz. I meant to say that, too. I usually have a prejudice against anyone who was on Seventh Heaven, with the exception of the great Stephen Collins, obviously. But, but yeah, Jeff Stultz was so great on the show. This is the most I've ever seen of him, and he was delightful.
And remember, Stephen Collins wasn't on Seventh Heaven. He was on Tales of the Gold Monkey.
He was on both.
But Tales of the Gold Monkey, Stephen Collins was on Seventh
Heaven. Russell.
And after so much you know, touching stuff, not to end on a moment of schadenfreude, but Fox's schedule is in so much trouble this fall, too.
It looks, it's a real shit show.
Yeah, especially with the, you know, demise of Utopia, they could really use something, but it's too late. So.
Yep. All right, let's put this to a vote. Sarah?
Yep.
Tara?
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes, too. All right, the series finale of Enlisted Alive Day. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot gray canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Yup.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has our winner.
I do. It's Peter Gallagher's eyebrows.
Of course.
You might be saying to yourself, Mm-hmm. Aren't they a winner every week?
Yes.
And they are. Mm-hmm. They're sharing their victory with us because on SVU, Donald Logue, temporary lieutenant, had to peace out for Gotham. Boo. Mm. But they've restaffed the position, not with Benson, but with Peter Gallagher.
Ooh.
And his eyebrows.
Yeah.
And he's going to be taking it personally. I can't wait.
And loser of the week?
Speaking of eyebrows, Neve Shulman.
And back brows.
Yeah. He is the host
of
Catfish.
Hey, her suit can't help it.
It's true. This is not about his eyebrows at all. He
least of his problems.
Yeah. He has a book out this week called In Real Life, and already, well, but two things coincided. One is he felt like he had to weigh in on the Ray Rice quote controversy unquote. Don't know what the controversy would be, but have to weigh in on the matter. And so he tweeted a selfie in an elevator with, I'm not even going to quote the dumbass thing he said, but it's like, you know, this elevator is a respectful zone and men who hit women are bad or whatever, which you can see in the picture, as our friend and former guest of the show, Matt Reimer, pointed out. You can see in the picture he's blocked the elevator door with like a water bottle and a bag or something just to get this moment down. So then after he tweeted that, the next day there was a big story on Vulture about how a story that he has in his new book called In Real Life, that's like part memoir and part how you should comport yourself on the internet today book, has a story about him getting kicked out of Sarah Lawrence because he punched someone. And the way he casts it in the story, as in the book, is that he didn't realize until afterward that the person that he punched in the face was a woman, which either way, not really a cool story. But apparently several eyewitnesses and the victim told Vulture the real story, which was there was kind of no ambiguity about what happened. It was witnessed by several people. His mother, who is an active alumna of Sarah Lawrence, begged them to not kick him out, but they did anyway. And the director of student affairs has called him a douche, using that word. So,
didn't he also initially claim that he was like defending photojournalism, and then that turned out to be not
true? The event was he was at an LGBT like dance or mixer or something, and he was taking pictures of these girls kissing, and they asked him to stop, and he told them like fuck off or something. So, Neve is a bad person, and I don't think that people who are opposed to domestic violence really need him as an ally, because it's kind of complicated with his own history. Fuck off, Neve.
Get off my team.
Mm-hmm.
And Tara, if they're interested in the gist of his book, where can they go to read something?
Yes, I wrote a review of the book for Slate.com, which I will also link in the show notes.
Another question. Do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time. All right, I just want everybody to know that I have to pee, so I'm high energy game master right now, doing a little pee dance.
He is doing the pee dance right now. I can confirm.
This is the second game time of the season. Tara won the first point, right?
I think so.
Yeah,
I thought valued guest won.
Oh, really? Who was the value guest?
It
was Jessica?
Yeah, it was Jessica. Totally.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, yeah.
For
all
the
right. Value
guest. Value.
It's been a while, folks.
Sorry.
Now that it's going to matter to my end quote
this
game
value
anyway.
This value guest is not winning.
But that's right. Kidshaw. That
that's
was
right.
Jessica.
Okay, so value guests have 1 point. Everybody else, zero.
Yeah.
Today we are playing a game from Elan Muscat, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Special thanks to the crew who follow at EHG Assist for added extra questions. Today we are playing I'm on a Boat, which will test your knowledge of the sea and spacecraft of television.
Oh,
navally!
I will give you the name of a vessel, and you tell me the show it is from for 2 points. If you need a clue, I'll give you the name of the captain or commander or something like that.
Boss.
Yeah, the boss of the boat, after which the correct answer is worth just 1 point.
Got it.
We have 54 boats today.
You're never going to survive that. We should really stop so that you can go to the bathroom.
No, I'll do it. I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Today we are...
going to be talking about water the whole time.
Yeah, it's true. Splashing against the poop deck.
All right, Picky, let's see who goes first.
We will start with valued guests.
All right, so we're going to go John, then Sarah, then Tara.
Yeah.
Are we ready to play I'm on a...
Yes.
Yes.
All right, John. And we're starting with easies. I'll let you know when the difficulty changes. This is the easy section. Enterprise NX-01. Enterprise NX-01. 2 points, give me the show, or you can ask for a clue.
Enterprise?
That's good for 2 points.
Nice.
All right.
Strong start.
Sarah?
Yes.
Breaker High.
Breaker High?
The boat is Breaker High.
Oh, gosh. I need a hint, please.
Captain Ballard. Captain Ballard. Keep in mind, this is an easy question.
Yes, I have that in mind. Right at the front of my mind. Benson.
Answer? Breaker High. Breaker High from Breaker High.
I believe it was about kids, like a semester at sea situation.
Oh.
All right, Tara.
I thought yeah.
The SS
up.
Feather Sword.
Is it The Wiggles?
2 points.
Wow.
There was a Wiggles show?
Apparently.
Huh.
John, Andromeda Ascendant. Andromeda Ascendant.
I would take a hint, please.
Dylan Hunt.
And his brother Mike.
Oh, no. I knew you were going to say that.
Boo.
I was like three.
I'll show myself
that's bullshit.
Stargate?
That's the show Andromeda. All right.
I think it was Canadian.
Sarah.
Yep.
USS Voyager.
Voyager?
2 points. I'm telling you, this is the easy section. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Sequest.
Sequest DSV.
2 points. All right, John. USS Enterprise NCC 1701.
Star Trek TOS.
Correct.
Nice.
All right, Sarah.
Uh-huh.
The Riptide.
Riptide?
Good.
We're all tied up, guys.
Tara.
Yep.
Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica.
2 points. John. Red Dwarf.
Red Dwarf.
Good. Sarah. Lex. L-E-X-X.
It's really tempting to say Lex, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to ask for a hint.
Stanley H. Tweedle is the captain or commander or owner of the Lex.
Oh, of the Lex. Farscape?
The answer, Lex.
Are you kidding?
No.
Nope. Tara.
Yeah.
The Batboat. Batboat.
Batman?
2 points. John, Planet Express Ship. Planet Express Ship.
Planet Express?
Good guess.
The answer, Futurama. Futurama. All right, we're on to Tara. Nope,
no, Sarah.
The C word. The C word.
Hint?
Joe Bluth.
Arrested Development.
1 point. All right. On to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Serenity.
I almost just made such a dumb mistake. Firefly.
Good for 2 points. John. USS Enterprise NCC 1701D.
Star Trek Next Generation.
That's good. Nice. For 2 points. Here's our last easy question for Sarah. Did I miss one? Oh, I did miss one. Here's our not last one. Okay, Sarah. SS Minnow.
Aw, Gilligan's Island.
Good for 2 points. This is the last easy question. Yes. This is according to the people that gave us the answers, not
understood.
Me.
Yes.
Just so you know.
Okay.
Your mileage may vary. Thunderbird 5.
Thunderbirds?
Good for 2 points. All right. We're switching over to the hard questions next. We're going easy, hard, medium.
Oh.
So here's your hard chunk. By the way, we missed number 17.
Oh,
we missed number
eagle.
17. And now it's number 19. All right. So whose question is this? This
John.
Is
John.
That's mine.
The Searcher. The Searcher. This may be time to ask for hints.
Yeah, I will take a hint, please.
Penelope Widmore. Penelope Widmore.
I don't know.
Lost. That's a vote from Lost. All right. For Sarah, Agamemnon. Brother of Menelaus. Captain John Sheridan. By the way, Brother of Menelaus is the name of the corporation that owns Previously.tv and Extra Hot. Great.
Yes, member of the House of Atreus. Agamemnon.
Babylon 5.
Good guess. Yeah.
Babylon 5. These are hard questions. Tara.
Yeah.
The USS Colorado.
Last Resort?
Whoa.
Nice.
Wow. Nice pull. God.
The that show about shit. Nuclear brinksmanship and fruit.
Yes.
All right. Let's see. We're on to it's John's turn.
Yes.
And St. Vitus's Dance.
Vitus's, I think.
St. Vitus's Dance. Yes.
Hint, Saint, please.
Detective Sonny Crockett is the captain of this vessel. Sonny Crockett.
Miami Vice.
If you hadn't got that, Sarah would have punched you through the microphone.
All right, Sarah. Black Betha. Black Betha.
Not Bertha? Hint.
No, no R in there.
Okay. Betha.
Sir Davos Seaworth. Sir, and that's S-E-R. S-E-R. That's a little hint. Sir Davos Seaworth.
Oh, right.
What? Yep. Oh, Game of Thrones?
Nice.
Good for 1 point. Tatara.
Yep.
Nimbus BP 1729, a.k.a. the Nimbus.
That's also Futurama.
That's good for 2 points. That's Zap Brannigan's ship. To John. Destiny.
Please let the captain be Beyonce.
Hint, please.
Autopilot. Mm. Yep. I'm afraid I can't give any context because I haven't watched the show. Stargate Universe. Mm. Stargate Universe. All right, Sarah. The Argo.
The Argo.
Yes.
The
Argo. Nobody say it. First person to say it is ejected from the game. I swear to God.
Hint.
Captain Avatar. A little on the nose. Captain Avatar. There's a couple captains, I'm going to say. That's not the only captain of the Argo.
Oh, good. SpongeBob SquarePants.
Star Blazers.
Never heard of it.
AKA, yeah, that's the American version of Battleship Yamato, I think is the name.
Oh, okay.
It's the cartoon. It has the Comet Empire in it.
Uh-huh.
And they blew up the moon.
Right.
And the spaceship is like it's a retrofitted Japanese destroyer.
Mm.
And it has like a big giant particle beam in the front.
Okay.
And I loved it when I was a kid.
Okay.
It. All right. John?
Was it full of skeletons?
No, Tara.
Me. Not interested. Me.
USS Flag with 2 G's.
Hint.
Admiral Ledger.
Gotham.
G.I. Joe.
Oh,
G.I. Joe.
Okay.
All right. John, USS Seahawk.
USS Seahawk.
Now, after you've said C word, everything that starts with C sounds filthy.
Yeah.
By the way.
Seahawk. Need a hint?
It won't help.
All right.
Sequest DSV.
Jag.
Evilly.
All right.
Still on somewhere.
Yep. Kahana.
Is this mine?
Yeah.
Kahana.
Yep.
Hawaii 5-0.
That's what I would have said.
Should have asked for a hint. Captain Galt or Charles Widmore. Mm. The second Widmore. The Widmore family from Lost.
Those dicks.
That wouldn't have helped.
All right. Let's. This will bring us into our score break. This is our 30th question.
Okay.
For Tara. PT-73.
Hint.
Lieutenant Commander Quentin McHale.
Jaws the TV series?
McHale.
McHale's Navy.
Oh, duh. Of course.
All right, let's get them scores.
Okay. Sarah has 8. John has 9. I have 16.
All right, so there's 24 questions left, so lots of game. John, we're still in the hard.
Okay.
Everybody's got 3 left, I think. The Argonaut. Argonaut.
Oh,
I will add,
God.
I've never heard of this show. So good luck.
Oh, fantastic.
That's why they call him hard.
Hint,
quiet you. Argo. Mike Nelson is the captain.
Oh. Right.
Oh, no. Got an answer.
I don't know.
It's not Mystery Science Theater 3000?
No, it's Sea Hunt.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Terrible.
We lost Sarah.
Terrible.
That's Hunt. 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 Sea Hunt. White Star.
White Star?
Yes. White Star.
Oh, hint.
Captain John Sheridan.
Again?
Mm-hmm. What show was that? That's a freebie.
Gosh, I don't remember.
I don't
Benson.
Either.
Benson 5. Babylon 5.
Oh, okay, Benson 5.
The Wraith.
Hint.
Ren. R-E-N. Ren. Good luck. Not going to get it.
Okay.
The Pirates of Darkwater.
Correct. I would not.
Wow.
All right, John.
Ew.
The USS Nathan. What was that?
I just said ew.
All right. USS Nathan James.
Oh, hint, please.
Tom Chandler. Could he be piloting any more boats?
Oh, God. Trying to break everyone. I don't know.
The Last Ship.
Oh.
The Last Ship.
That piece of shit.
All right. So this is Sarah.
Yes.
The hard question you might get. The ship, Ohana.
Oh, wow. That lined up nicely. Thanks, Picky. That's below deck.
That's good for 2 points.
Nice.
Captain Lee.
Tara, here's your last hard question.
Uh-huh.
Didn't quite match up. Somebody's getting an extra easy, medium one.
Okay.
Calico.
Hint.
Captain Carl Majors.
The Fall Guy?
This boat deals with things that come up from the depths that are 30 stories high. Godzilla. Godzilla and Godzuki. All right. John.
Yes.
A second boat called The Searcher. Did we have a Searcher before?
Yes.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, this is a second boat called The Searcher. Different show.
Damn. I remembered which show it was on, too. I'll take a hint, please.
Admiral Ephraim Asimov. That's a little on the nose show. Ephraim Asimov.
I don't know.
Buck Rogers and the blah, 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 25th century.
Sure.
All right, here's our last hard question. Sarah?
Yep.
SDF1, and in brackets, Macross. Macross. Yeah, Macross.
Hint.
Bruno J. Gioval.
What?
Yeah. Oh, no, wait, sorry. That's not an I. That might be an L. Global.
Global.
Uh-huh. Global, yeah. It is a hard. It is hard.
Clone Wars?
Good guess.
It is a cartoon. It is in space. It's Robotech. Robotech. All right. We've now gone in. We're now into the mediums. Okay. So we've left hard behind. So we're going to wrap up the game here in
Speak
medium territory. So to Tara.
Yep.
Moya.
Oh, is that Farscape?
Yep.
That's good for 2 points.
Damn it.
John, U.S. John, you're getting all of these, John. The USS Defiant. Getting all the USSs.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
Nice.
Good for 2 points. The ship, Childish Tycoon.
Childish Tycoon?
Yes.
Hint.
Troy Barnes. Are several people yelling at their MP3
yes,
devices
they are,
at the
sorry.
Moment?
Melrose that? Place.
Community. Community.
Oh, well. Yeah.
All right.
Never
Tara.
Get that.
Yeah.
Nightboat.
The Simpsons.
Good for 2 points. Nightboat from The Simpsons. Oh, there's always a fjord. The Black.
Don't badmouth the boat.
The Black Rock. The Black Rock.
Oh, is that me?
Yes, you. Yeah.
Hint, please.
Magnus Hanso. Got a guess?
No.
Lost. Lost.
The Hanso Foundation.
Yep. Mm. All right. This one is going to Sarah. Mm-hmm. The Live Forever. Four is the number. Live Forever.
Hint.
Scowley.
What?
Scowley. Yeah, Scowley. Scowley, maybe. S-K-O-W-I-E.
Scowey.
Scowey?
Yeah.
Scowey. Yeah, right. Scowey. Captain of the Live Forever.
I can't decide whether to guess SVU or the X-Files. SVU.
Tara.
Simpsons.
Yeah, it was a
the partner
Live
forever. Anyone?
The partner of McBain.
Yeah.
Oh, then, live forever. Nice.
Thank you.
Very nice.
I needed something.
That was good.
Mendoza.
Bringing us into our last score break before the end of the game. The ship is Pegasus.
I know I should know this hint.
Admiral Helena Kane.
Yeah. Battlestar Galactica.
That's good for 1 point.
Okay.
Let's get them scores.
Sarah has 10. John has 11. I have 21.
Okay. It's nobody's game except ours, but let's
keep
going.
Swimming upstream.
All right. So for John, the Pacific Princess.
Thanks, Becky. The Love Boat.
That's good for 2 points. For Sarah, the Sun Princess. The Sun Princess.
Hint.
Captain James Kennedy III. Oh, sorry, Jim Kennedy III.
Love Boat, Talladega Nights.
Oh, so close. Love Boat, The Next Wave.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Urich.
I forgot that was really a thing.
Yeah.
All right, Tara. Slice of Life.
Hint.
Dexter Morgan.
Yeah.
Dexter.
Might be. All right, John. Summer Breeze.
Ooh.
Summer Breeze. Need
yeah,
a hint?
That's stuck in my head now.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take a hint.
Seth Cohen is the
captain. The OC.
Of the Summer Breeze from the OC. All right, Sarah. Jealous much?
Hint?
Bobby Cobb.
Bobby Cobb?
Yep. Like the salad.
Like the salad. Like Tex Cobb. I don't know.
Cougar Town.
Yep. Cougar Town is the correct answer. All right, John. Oh, sorry, Tara. Yeah. Gone Fizzin. Fission. Gone Fission.
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 Okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Hint?
C. Montgomery Burns.
Oh, The Simpsons.
Good for 1 point. All right, here's your last question, John. Walrus. Walrus.
Walrus. I'll take a hint.
Captain James Flint. Not a good show, but it does involve this ship. I'll give it that.
I don't know.
Black Sails. Black Sails.
Oh, right. Oh, your favorite.
Yeah.
Of course.
All right. Here's your last one, Sarah. Northwestern.
Northwestern. Hint.
Sig Hansen?
Yeah. Lost.
Deadliest Catch.
Oh, of course. Yeah. That guy.
And our last question. The SS Tipton.
Hint.
Dr. Marion Mosby, bracket manager.
Oh, I Met Your Mother?
No. The Suite Life on Deck.
Oh, right.
That might have been a hard one. All right. Mm-hmm. So I think Tara is our winner. Let's just check the scores and make sure.
Sarah has 10. John has 14. I have 23.
All right. So Tara
Yay!
Wins.
But good job, Tara.
It's time for our shits and giggles question. This would have been our tiebreaker if we needed it. First person
tie
to show.
Breaking the waves.
Ah!
Nice. First person to. That's worth 1 Dave point. That's a good joke.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Okay. Whoever answers this gets 3 Dave points. I will say the name of the ship. I will start giving hints if you don't get it. All right. Jupiter 2. Will you know what Jupiter 2 is? Are you in danger of not knowing? The captain.
Danger Bay?
No, you're out. The captain, Doctor.
Lost in Space.
John Robertson. That's it. Lost in
nice.
Space. Added a danger and a will in there.
Yeah.
All right. So.
Tara.
Tara.
Congratulations, Tara. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Crate. We ran down our picks and pans for the new TV season. Then we went around the dial with stops at Couples Therapy, The Chair, The Blacklist, and what was that one?
Iyanla Fix My Life.
Thank you. Our 6-year-old international correspondent reviewed the latest episode of Face Off. We celebrated 2 tiny triumphs, and John successfully pitched us enlisted finale Alive Day for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara won this week's Game Time Navally. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Teagle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
watching Utopia is morally wrong.
Sarah D. Bunting,
how are you doing?
And John Ramos,
don't eat ice cream in the car.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
On NBC. Third Rock moving to Sunday.
Sing it! We will,
Third Rock you! Forgiveness, please!